Well, it's nice to know I have one friend in this audience. Anyway, I hope you're doing well. I see friends and hiking buddies out there. Can you hear me in the back okay now? All right, there we go. Well, it was a few weeks ago that I talked to you guys last. And I think at that time, if you'll remember, we covered some of the parallels about coming out of Egypt. That Abraham went down to Egypt and Israel was down there, and that there was these parallels, and that we have a demonstration of personal exodus out of Egypt as well as national or group exodus. And we also talked about how Egypt can be impossible to break, and that's why we have a Savior, we have a Redeemer, we have someone to rescue us and bring us out of Egypt, and that it's vital for us to understand that we can escape, that God has made a way of escape. Otherwise, we wouldn't even try. We also talked about the fact that we didn't deserve the saving. Israel didn't deserve being saved, but nonetheless, God did it. And he gave them riches and rewards anyway, just because he can, just because he's kind, just because he's good. We also talked about that the meaning of words, the words that are translated into our Bibles, that the translation is one part of it. But to really understand the meaning and to gain the insights we should, we have to understand the context or how that word is used. And so those are some of the things we did. And when we concluded, I threatened that I would give part two. Well, I'm here to fulfill my threat today. And it's interesting, this is a good time to still be talking about coming out of Egypt. Because if you're like me, we didn't quite make it. We still have some of these same problems. And it's also interesting because the whole focal point of being taken out of Egypt wasn't actually freedom. It was much more about something else. Now, if we think about it, it's not true that Moses just said, "Let my people go." What he did say was, "Let my people go that they may go and worship me in the wilderness." Just like Patrick Henry never said, "Give me liberty." What he said was, "Give me liberty or give me death." Our founding fathers never just wrote, "We hold these truths to be self-evident." They actually continued on and mentioned some of those things. So the real impact is when we look at the whole phrase. And it's interesting that when Israel left Egypt, they didn't have a party. That wasn't the party. In fact, what God told them to do was, "I want you now to start counting days." They were actually looking forward to something else. They were looking forward to Mount Sinai, to the law, to something else. Then you see the party. The focus was on worshiping God. The focus was not just on freedom. And if you think about it, it wasn't freedom at all. It was the freedom to change from this yoke of sin, bondage to sin, to now bondage to Christ, bond servants. So we're switching our allegiance. That's what this is about. You know, and we can look at physical examples of how if freedom was the only goal, what's the point? When the blacks were freed and they could go anywhere they wanted, many of them found themselves in worse shape because they had nowhere to go. Okay, so what do? They wind back up in there. There are a lot of people, the people that buy the most lotto tickets are the ones who are massively in debt, underemployed, unemployed, and they're buying these lotto tickets. And every now and then, one of them wins the lotto. 5 years later, so they were freed from all this physical debt, all of this stuff. 5 years later, they have more debt than they had before, they quit their job, and they're the worst case. So what we want to do is not just get freedom, but we want to have a better hope, a better future, a better direction. So that's one of the things that when we look at this whole story about coming out of Egypt and being successful that we want to keep in mind. There's a huge difference between just having freedom and then what are you going to do with it. And so what we want to do is make sure that before we ever try to leave Egypt, before we leave those borders, we know where we're going to go. And so we need to think in ourselves and to commit. What noble or good thing will I do when I'm released from my personal Egypt? What is my version of worship God in the wilderness? I'm sorry, I can't remember. I know Mr. Lukers talked about a relative of his who was an alcoholic. And it's interesting, many of these people who break addictions, personal Egypts, they go on to do something. They say, you know what, when I get done with this, I'm going to help someone else. I'm going to tell my story so that maybe someone else doesn't go through this. Over and over again, they do that. And in essence, it's part of what helps them to break that addiction. You know, it's very important. So many times people will leave one addiction and just to substitute it for another. Well, I quit smoking, now I'm an alcoholic. Or I quit drinking, but now I have an addiction to food I eat all the time or I spend. What we want to do is make sure when we come out of Egypt, we go to something good, something that serves God, honors God. And those types of goals, those types of forethought make it much easier for God to get us out, because now there's a point. We're going to go somewhere positive. We now are on our way to worshiping God in the desert. And we have to figure out ahead of time what is that version for whatever Egypt we're trying to break. When we do that, things work much better. So, you know, what type of new person will I be once I'm freed? What things will I then be freed up to do? One of the things about when we leave Egypt, it's imperative that we understand that corresponding where, how am I going to worship God? And what I find a lot of times, you just take the opposite of what your problem is. I've told you honestly that one of my problems has always been being afraid. So I focus on things, I read books, I read movies that direct me toward having faith, having hope in God, trusting in God. And so I try to put those things in my life and I try to make decisions on that because I want to be moving in that direction, building the things that will help squash whatever it is that constricts us and keeps us down. So that's one of the points I wanted to bring out today, is that we need to have that concept of where are we going. In sports, we can understand this. They always talk about follow through. I one time did a contest. I covered up half the TV so I couldn't see the basket, and I watched a free throw. And you could tell just from how the ball left his hand, it's a make or a miss about 90% of the time, depending on if he pushed it or if he had perfect follow through. So what we want to do is have spiritual follow through. Now, if you want to go to Exodus 12 and verse 51, there's a very interesting phrase here. And what it says in verse 51, "And it came to pass on that very same day that the Lord brought the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt according to their armies." And what I want to focus is on this phrase, on that very self-same day. It sounds very poetic, very beautiful. But it's actually much more than poetry. It's very significant. And what we want to do is whenever we get these strange sounding phrases, we have to ask ourselves, why? What does this mean? And the Hebrew basically means on the bone of the day he led them out. On the bone of the day. So this is kind of a weird phrase. I think the Hebrew word is etzem. So what we do whenever we come up with strange phrases that we don't quite grasp, we look at other places where this phrase is used. One of those places where this word is used is in Genesis 7 and verse 13, where Noah, on that self-same day, on the bone of the day, entered into the ark. In other places it's used is in Genesis 17, where it says Abraham and his son were circumcised on that self-same day, on that bone of the day. When the nation of Israel was formed, they had to decide, you know, now that we're an independent nation, what are we going to name our holiday, our Independence Day? What are we going to call it? And they named it the Day of the Etzem, the Day of the Bone. So it's obviously, we got to understand how this is used and what is the connection, what do these all have in common? So that we can understand the significance of what we read here when Israel left Egypt on that self-same day, on the bone of the day. And so, I don't know, while you're kind of thinking and trying to put together what do those all have in common, let's just talk about bones. We all know what bones do. They help us to stand upright. We can fight wars with them. And not a lot of people realize that even the etymology of how we use words in America have been tainted with the Hebrew, because most of our founding fathers, people came over, they knew Hebrew. William Bradford, if I remember right, he wrote the first chapter of his little book talking about the things in Hebrew, and he even said why. He says, if God decided to write the Holy Scriptures in Hebrew, shouldn't we actually understand the language so we can understand a little bit better of what he said. So if I were to tell you someone was being a baby, not trying hard, or was a scaredy cat, there's a couple things we might say to that person. One of which might be, why don't you grow a backbone? And so when we look at all of these, we're going to find that the essence of this word, it is about having inner courage. It's about fortitude. It's about looking our dangers, our fears, our Egypts in the eye and proceeding anyway. So let's go through a little bit of background then. First of all, let's start with Noah and his family. Now, we know that God decided to wipe out the whole planet because they were evil. Every thought they had was evil. Now, you know and I know that when we do something different than everybody else, they don't like it. And when light starts shining and talking, the darkness gets very uneasy. So as Noah's building this boat and they're saying, hey, what's going on? Why are you doing that? And he says, you guys are evil. Your thoughts are continually evil and you're going to be wiped off the face of the planet. These people weren't peacefully just saying, oh, well, okay, we'll get a little sign and we'll protest your comments and your unfair prejudice against us. I don't think so. I think they were threatening him. I think they were giving him a hard time. And I think he feared for his life. I have no doubt, knowing human nature, that they were saying things like, well, if we see any floods coming, we're going to go in there, we're going to cut your throat, toss you out, and we're going to take the boat from you. And no doubt, Noah thought, well, when God says go in there, I'm going to sneak in the middle of the night, we'll lock this thing up. But God said, no, you're not going to do it that way. You're going to enter that in the full face of everyone. You're going to have to confront, not evade your fears. So Noah entered the ark on the bone of the day, facing his fears straight on, all of this mob that could easily just wipe him out, and he had to bring those animals one by one, in faith, had to proceed. Now let's take a look at the story of Abraham. So it says when he and his son were circumcised, it was on the bone of the day. Well, back then, the human body was kind of considered to be the end-all be-all. And to mutilate the body, that was a serious offense. You could bring down a lot of wrath from the locals, and you know, you could easily be killed for something like this. That wasn't something that was easily tolerated in that time. And so once again, God says on the bone of the day, he did this. It wasn't secret. People knew what was happening, and he had to face his fears. He couldn't run and hide, couldn't go off somewhere else and do it and come back a little bit later and say, I was vacationing on the Mediterranean, good to see you guys. No, he had to confront his fears face on. Now let's go to Israel when they were in captivity. So now with the nation of Israel, here's what God says to do. He says, you know what? Why don't you go grab one of those lambs and then let's bring it to your house and keep it there for a while. At first, it sounds like no big deal, except if we remember that sheep and lambs, they were one of the Egyptian deities. So now what God's doing, I think this is like a faith-building exercise. Says, go grab one of the Egyptian gods, tie it up at your house. Keep it there for a few days. They're going to make a lot of noise, and you're going to be sweating out. Do my Egyptian rulers know what's happening, that I got one of their gods tied up here? Then what does God do next? He says, now slit the throat of this lamb, and just so the Egyptians can know who did this, put the blood on your doorstep, you know, on the front porch of your front door, and then let's cook that lamb, and then let's eat it. Now, we understand all the symbolism, but look at what type of fears they're having to be confronted with. You take the Egyptian gods, you tie it up to your house, you cut the throats, you smear the blood on your house, door, post, then you cook it. People can smell that for miles around. Then you eat it. There's no way the Egyptian landlords don't know what's going on. But they are being forced to face their fears. Okay, and so I think it's really important for us to understand all the dynamics. And so when we think about us, God says he's the same yesterday, today, and forever. He's just, he's fair. So if he's going to make them face their fears to get out of Egypt, he's going to make us face our fears. We're not going to be asked to do anything less intimidating, hard. Sometimes what we're asked to get out of a personal Egypt, it's going to seem more than we can do. But we know it's possible, but it's going to be so hard, it's going to seem so gut-wrenching, that we're going to think, you know what? It might just be better to stay in my Egypt. it might be better to stay here than to admit that I got this problem and I need help. It might just be easier just to say the economy's bad, I can't get a job, and why try? I'm just so pushed down, I'm so oppressed. Or to just go to a mate and say, hey, let's be honest about this. I'm gonna care again. And yes, you might get hurt. You have to risk something. And that's what I see in these pages, that when we're talking about changing something that has just been crushing our life, sucking the strength out of us, it's not gonna be easy. It is going to take all the courage we can muster, all the faith we can muster. We might have someone else pray for us just so we have the strength to go through to it. And so that is what we have to understand. It is a war, and it's going to require great effort on our part. But other people have done it, and God will back us up if we're willing to step out and walk out on the bone of the day, to face our fears, face our concerns right in the eye, and say, I will proceed anyway. I think that's one of the lessons on escaping Egypt. And so as we go forward, as we look forward to Pentecost, as we count the days to what will we do, how we will worship our God in the wilderness, you know, this is the beginning of God's calendar. I hope when we look back at the end of this year that we can say that we left our own personal Egypts to worship our God in the wilderness on the bone of the day.